Good evening, one and all. Yes, a Wednesday, halfway through another week, and it's another book and a chat with me, Barry, here on New Visions Radio. Well, as we get old, and yes, as we get very old in some of our cases, it amazes me. My wife and I always joke about this. You wake up in the morning and you wonder what part's going to ache today. Because it just is like that. That's part of growing old. You have to face up to it. It is what it is. But then, what about the people? And there's nearly 40 million, I think it is, something like that, in America that look after people, ailing loved ones. A lot of people. I mean, I know there's, friends and companions and all these sort of thing, that stuff like that, that do this stuff. In fact, my wife used to do that sort of stuff, and she's got some stories I can tell you, but that's another for another time. Anyway, but then what about them? And what about, what they have to go through, let alone the worry and concern about their loved one, but the looking after them and everything like that. I know we looked after my wife's parents, like a hospice at home, and the stuff we had to do through the night, through the day, and everything, plus get on with your own lives. And what about when COVID was on? Suddenly we had lockdown. Suddenly we had more people having to look after other people by themselves because they couldn't, people couldn't be there for them, not physically, a lot of the time. Well, my guest today, she has written a book which she shares with this sort of thing, one couple's journey through the catastrophic illness to healing and hope. Well, I better introduce her, haven't I? Because on the show today, I have the one and only Sarah Cart. Hi, Sarah, how are you doing?
I'm fine, thank you, Barry. Thank you so much for having me on.
It's a pleasure. It's a pleasure. It really is. As I say, obviously, I do understand a little bit, but there's no way I could understand fully, not having to gone through that, especially not with the COVID going on and everything. But when did this sort of your husband start to become unwell, and you started having to sort of take more and more time looking after him?
Well, it started very slowly. He was diagnosed with an incurable autoimmune disease in 2017, and we were managing it symptom by symptom, and we thought we had everything under control as it migrated from organ to organ and diagnosis to diagnosis. And then in 2019, he had a pacemaker put in for congestive heart failure, and
Okay.
that was just not strong enough.
Oh,
And we
really?
learned
Oh.
that he was going to need a heart transplant.
Right.
And so we started doing what we needed to do to get him on the list. Everyone could see that he was dying, and I found myself on a really steep learning curve as his caregiver. And it got really intense. And 2 weeks after the world shut down, his kidneys shut down, and he ended up in the hospital. And we had not yet gotten him on the list for a transplant. So,
Oh, crikey.
I said goodbye to him on a Friday night, and I didn't see him for 10 weeks. And I knew there was a very, very real possibility that as I was saying goodbye to him, I was saying goodbye to him for the last
In,
time.
indeed, so. So this, I mean, what was the issue getting him on the list for a heart? Did it just, does it just take a long time, or do they have to go for all sorts of checks and tests?
It's amazing. And we were very naive about what was involved. They need to assess every physical system in your body. And they also, there are financial conversations,
Oh, of
there are
course,
psychological evaluations. They want to make sure that you've got someone who can be a caregiver for you once you've received the transplant. And it doesn't matter whether it's a kidney or a heart or lung. You have to have someone who's going to be there with you, and both of you have to sign off on all the paperwork that says that you understand what a commitment this is. And anyway, it was just really long. And actually, the last thing it came down to, we needed to get him a colonoscopy, and the pandemic had been declared, and a colonoscopy is elective, and nobody was doing elective procedures. And I wouldn't think of a colonoscopy as being elective if you ask me, but that was the last hurdle. And in fact, once he was admitted to the hospital, I don't know that they actually did one. But at that point, the only people who were being rushed into ORs were emergency situations because they weren't taking you into an OR if they didn't if they didn't know for sure that you didn't have COVID. So, and the tests were taking 4 days, 4 or 5 days. So they weren't just calling you and saying, "Hey, we've got the kidney that you've been waiting for 2 years," because they didn't know if you were. So the only people who were going into the OR were either, like an emergency appendectomy or a car crash victim, or if you were a transplant, awaiting a transplant, it was because you were so sick you were dying and already in the hospital. So
Interesting.
that's.
I mean, what you said about, you basically you're thrust into the role of a nurse and caregiver.
Yes.
And caregiver, you don't realize how what that entails. Literally everything you had to do. I mean, day night, whatever. I know, as I say, from my own.
It started so innocently. At first he would drive to his doctor's appointments and I would go with him and I would take notes. And then it got so that I was the one driving to the doctor's appointments. And then it got so that I was the one managing all of his medications. And it was as if we were two frogs in a pot of water. It just kept getting warmer and warmer. And then we suddenly realized it was so warm we couldn't jump out.
I
Yeah,
know
it was.
from my own experience. Well, my father had Parkinson's, and I remember my mother sort of looking after him. Things like the alarms on the bed, and getting him in the car, and all sorts. She actually
Yeah.
talks now about that sort of thing, and silly things. One of the things she says when she does this is one of the most important things is for the your husband, if it is your husband, to wear a belt so that you can grab
Yes.
him. Little things like
Yes.
that.
Exactly. It's just amazing stuff. There were times when he would he also got so exhausted that he would fall asleep in the middle of a sentence. And if I were driving and he would all of a sudden point to something and I'd think that I needed to change lanes or there's a hazard in the road, and then I would realize that, oh no, wait a minute, he's asleep and he's having some sort of spasm and this is not related to my driving. And you miss your best friend, the person that you would talk about, you're not gonna believe what happened today, except that what you're not gonna believe happened today is because he did it.
Talks becomes a one-way thing. I mean, you want to talk to them and tell them the stuff, but you don't know if they're understanding it, but you do it. It's yeah, it is. And
He became he be, yeah he became like a 10-year-old boy, a really well-intentioned 10-year-old boy, but kind of dangerous. I didn't want to leave him on his own because he
Well,
might.
that's the thing, isn't it? You can't. It's I remember my wife's mother. We heard her about 3, 4 o'clock in the morning, and she'd got dressed and gone outside. I mean, she came in with grass all over her and stuff like that. We had a sort of lock on the door, lower one, but we had, after that we put one on the top so she couldn't get out. Suddenly she said, "I wanted to go for a walk." This is 4 o'clock in the morning,
We had a middle of the night one where I heard ice falling on the floor somewhere far away, and he was getting ice out of the ice maker. And when I went out to ask him what he was doing, it's 4 in the morning, what's up? He said, "Oh, well, my pills are all in a pile on the floor. They're all brown. So I've called 911." And now I'm thinking, do I hear sirens? Is somebody going to be coming? And his pills aren't, I mean, he hasn't been back into the medicine cabinet. I know he hasn't because he would have had to go right by me. And it took me like 2 minutes to get him to con to and he, oh, and he couldn't find his phone. I don't know where my phone is. Well, how did you call 911? Well, I don't know. And so I suggested breakfast, and he said, "Oh, okay, I'll get breakfast." And he goes into the kitchen, and he gets a plate, and he puts a tomato on it and a banana, and he grabs a steak knife, and he starts to cut the banana like it's a piece of steak. It was just it. The whole thing was so bizarre. And it's like, who
Yeah, I
are you,
mean,
and what happened to my husband?
exactly, and you don't want to. I mean, in hindsight, it's funny in a way, but of course, at the time, it's scary. This is the person that you love. This is the person, as you say, your best friend. And what's happened to them? Where are they gone? This isn't them.
And I didn't know, if I called a doctor and said this had happened, would the doctor have thought I was crazy? I was so sleep deprived at that point that I didn't know what to
Exactly. Well,
do.
that's the other thing. It does affect you and your lack of sleep, and thus becomes you become he could easily become unwell as well. And if that's the case, then you're in real trouble because, especially in lockdown, there's nobody to look after you. It's not like you can get people to come and visit. But in your case and in your book, you don't you sort of bring in the fact of the resiliency and the power of the community that helped you.
The community was amazing. You have to, so he went into the hospital 2 weeks into the pandemic, and the hospital protocol was that I could not visit him,
Right.
just like so many people who had
I know,
family
terrible, yeah.
COVID experiences at that time. It's just a terrible, I was just one of millions of people in the situation I was in. But I was trying very hard to stay isolated in case the hospital were to decide that they would let me have a compassionate visit because I really did think he was going to die.
Right.
And my neighbors were, I'd open my front door and there would be a watercolor of flowers because real flowers won't last, or banana bread, or a box of tea. I'd go for a walk and I'd come home and someone would have left dinner on my kitchen table for me. Wonderful things like that. And it's just such a strange time. My first Zoom call was the Friday night that he went into the hospital.
Wow.
And I think now how it became such a critical part of my
Oh my
life.
goodness, yes. I mean,
It, yeah.
I we used to have a Sunday quiz with all my family in England and stuff like that, that all of us used to get on Zoom and we could see each other and chat, and we had took it in turns to do a little quiz on a Sunday morning. But that was mainly so everybody kept in contact with everything. I saw more of my family then than I've ever done all the time I've been over it.
Well, and our boys, we have four sons and they're all over the country and they got closer with each other as a
Yes,
result. I
of
mean,
course,
not
yeah.
physically, but the same thing.
Yeah.
They would Zoom with each other and they would call each other and say, "Hey, have you checked on mom lately?" Or, "I just had a really strange conversation with dad. Did he call you and ask you how things are in your bunker?" I mean, just really weird, off the wall kind of stuff.
Now,
So.
you went, obviously, the various illnesses and stuff like that. When did he start? When did the sort of, well, your book's called On My Way Back to You. When did he start coming back to you?
After the heart transplant, well, it was a little bit more complicated than anybody expected. When the surgeon took him in to the OR because there was a heart allocated, the surgeon called me and said, "This is 50% of the battle. Having a heart, having a new heart is 50% of it. Recovery will be the other 50%."
Right.
What they didn't know and didn't realize until almost 10 days later was he also had a fractured left hip.
Oh.
That was a bit of a surprise. And it happened, unfortunately, I know it happened on my watch, but I don't know exactly when. I was aware of him before he went into the hospital. Suddenly, one day, I just realized he was taking a lot of ibuprofen. What are you doing? Well, I bruised my hip. How? Well, last night, walking back from the commode to the couch, I fell asleep and I went straight over like a tree. And I'm like, "Did you hit the coffee table?" "I don't think so. I don't know. I was asleep." So by the time he got to the hospital, he was so sick they just put him to bed and they never moved him around. And the radiologist was doing something and put the X-ray machine just a little farther south than they usually do to check on the heart every day after the surgery. And the radiologist said, "Has anyone mentioned this fractured left hip?" So he came home to me after 10 weeks in the hospital in a wheelchair, unable to walk. We were already talking with a hip doctor. He was dependent on opioids for the extreme pain. And the hip doctor was wonderful about saying, "Okay, we're going to do pain management right now. We're going to have you talk with the specialists so that when we are able to fix this hip 2 months from now," it turned out to be 2 months, "we'll be able to give him medicine and have it still have some effect. Because if he keeps taking the medicine at the rate right now, it won't work."
Did you have the say 2 months? Sometimes you have to build the muscles up before they do that. I know with knees and stuff like that, they say, okay, you've either got to make it worse or we've got to build the muscles up before we can operate. Is that what happened
It
with?
wasn't muscles. They just needed him to be. He lost 40 pounds over
Okay,
that
get
10
some
weeks.
weight on, right,
So
yeah.
they needed to get some weight, and he came home with an amazing bed sore. And we
Oh
had to get the
no.
bed sore. Yeah, we
Oh
had to get the bed
dear.
sore under control because
Oh
those
no.
prostheses that they put in for
Yeah.
hips and knees,
Yeah.
infection is such a risk.
Indeed, so it's a
So,
worse risk, yeah. Yeah.
yeah. So,
Oh.
yeah, I learned a lot. I'm an English major. I don't really do blood, or all those other things,
But you
bandages,
have to,
but
right?
I learned a lot. I had to, yeah,
Yep.
one step at a time.
Yep, I remember having to sort of blood and putting in his catheter and and all this sort of stuff. You had to learn.
Yeah.
You couldn't turn your
So you
nose up
asked,
at it.
yeah, you asked when he started to find his way
Yeah,
back to
sorry.
me. And I
Yeah.
have to say, no, it really finally felt like he was on his way back after he got the hip surgery. That was just the night that I brought him home. The hip surgery ended up being outpatient because the people at the hospital knew him so well. They were like, he knows how to transfer. He knows what to be careful of. You can take him
Yep,
home, which
yep.
was great because we were expecting a tropical storm. I was driving
Oh
in
my
terrible rain.
goodness.
But he just having him home that night, and he had been so terrified of that he'd have to stay in the hospital because he would
Yep.
have some PTSD about being back with all those beeping
Yep.
machines and the
Yep.
lights. And anyway, so that's when I finally felt like he will find his way back. We can do this.
Okay. And I mean, so what's the situation now with him?
The situation now is he's doing so well that first of all, he plays a lot of croquet.
All
He's trying
right.
to convince his cardiologist that he plays cardiac croquet. He does not. There's no such thing. And he's doing so wonderfully that
Come on, croquet is a vicious game.
it can be. You're right. It
It
can be.
can be. I remember playing. When we went to band camp, I think it was that they had a croquet lawn there, and yeah, I mean knocking the other po your opponent's ball miles away, sort
Oh
of thing.
yeah,
Yeah,
he
I mean,
loves it. It's like full-size billiards,
no,
standing up there and
it is,
yeah.
yeah, just
Yeah.
okay, you hit their ball and then you knock it. We used to put our foot on the
Just
one and
right.
just knock it away. Try and hit the
Yep.
get them out. But yeah, vicious game.
Vicious, vicious. Anyway, so he's doing so wonderfully that more than
Great.
occasionally he annoys me and it's fabulous. I am so
Oh.
grateful. I mean, I'll wake up in the middle of the night because he's snoring and I'll think, you know what? So many friends that have lost their loved ones, what they would give for that kind of an annoyance. It's just, we are so blessed and so lucky.
So is that what
So.
made you know, what led you to actually write it all down in On My Way Back to You? I mean, I know you've sort of written, papers and all sorts of stuff before, but what
Yeah.
made you write the book?
It was a way to process everything that we had been through. When I'm really stressed, I journal. And so I had my journals to refer to. I also, when he was in the hospital, in an effort to keep everybody on the same page with how things were going, I was sending out emails to close family and friends on a regular basis. And those emails were the outline of the first draft of the book.
Like a
Trying.
newsletter sort of thing.
Yeah, just a few paragraphs each night about, here's how things went today.
Right, yeah.
Last week I told you we could take things week by week. Right now we're taking things hour by hour, that kind of thing.
Okay.
And trying really hard to be brutally honest, but also be as optimistic as we could be. I didn't want to say anything in those emails that I would ever have to take back. I didn't want to
Right.
make any promises about how well he was doing, and have to claw that back later. So they were there. There was he went on the transplant list, and then on Good Friday they took him off the transplant list. So Easter weekend was really tough, and I sent out an email as soon as they took him off the list on Friday because I didn't want people to call me all weekend and say, "Hey, it's Easter, Happy Easter, keep hope
Oh,
alive," or whatever.
yeah.
And then Easter evening, the phone rang. It was not a number I recognized. I don't know why I answered it, but it was a transplant nurse saying, "I'm just calling to let you know he's back on the list," which was, I mean, it was such a huge blessing. I felt like we'd had our 3 days in the tomb.
Right.
And three days after that, a heart was allocated, and he just celebrated his quote unquote fourth birthday yesterday. He got the transplant on April 16th, 2020.
I was actually working at Harefield when they did the first heart transplant. Not actually in the hospital, but about 200 yards from the hospital, and I remember all the sort of media and TV and everything that were there. And you think about that, and then you think, it's common now. You know, it's
Yes.
medicine gets
Yes.
so advanced so quickly.
And yet, one of Ben's dearest friends is a heart transplant surgeon up in Hartford. And for him to realize, to see the patient side of it, and he said, "I think of it as common. I do it, you know, 100 times a year." And he just said, but I realize that for you, it is a miracle. For the patient, it is always a miracle. And organ donation does that. I believe that four other patients' lives were positively impacted by the choice that family
That one
whose
family
heart,
did. That's the thing. I mean, you don't realize how much people use the
just so
retinas,
powerful.
the this, the that. You know, people could. You think it's just, you know, one thing, people hear hearts or kidneys and stuff like that, but there's so much else
It's skin
that
for
is
burn
used.
victims. I mean, it's
Yeah.
all kinds of things. Just amazing.
And yeah, as we were talking, you know, colonoscopy, no, still the same thing. Still this. That hasn't improved at all, to my
No,
knowledge.
it hasn't.
It's a bit quicker than it was, but it's not the
It's still not pleasant. They're just
No,
never going to be able to convince me that it's an easy thing.
let's face it, it's not the actual surgery, it's the pre-surgery with
Yes.
that. It's the worst part. Anyway,
Yep,
enough of
exactly.
that. Yes, I think I'm okay for another 8 years now, but yes, yes, it's something that lives for a while, shall I say. Anyway, so he's now sounds like it's you know, it's something. Obviously, it's not just, yeah, the medical, it's the love and the power of the community, as we said, resilience and stuff like that, to see him through this determination, and obviously in your case as well, and a lot of patience with the patient sort of thing.
Well, yeah, a lot of it too was thinking, my goodness, we were young when we stood up in front of that minister and said, "I do," for in sickness and in health, and how naive. But I just go back and think, when would I have said no to all of this? And I couldn't come up with a time when I would have exchanged. It was our turn to go through something, and we just tried to do it with as much grace and grit as we could. And we came out the other side wonderfully blessed and very lucky.
Now, obviously, in your book, On My Way Back, it goes through a lot of this. It chronicles not just Ben's illness, you know, but also the recovery and the roadmap, what you did, and you know how people helped and everything like that. What sort of response have you had to the book? Because I'd have thought it would have touched a lot of people.
I'm amazed at the people who have said, "Thank you, I needed this. I needed to do it. I didn't. I'm flattered at that. It's been really, really wonderful. Even people who knew us, who know us well, and knew what we were going through at the time, have read it and said, "Oh my goodness, I had no idea that's how intense it got." I mean, we did a lot of smoke and mirrors. We didn't want people to
Oh, crikey,
fret.
yes. Yeah, yeah.
So,
Yeah, I mean, it's like you say, you didn't want, like at that thing at Easter that you said, you know, you didn't want to tell people about this, you know, this, that, and the other, because then you people start contacting you, worrying you, they worry others, you know, and you don't want to sort of think the worst and have other people saying, you know, suddenly think the worst or what have you. It's
Right.
very
You don't want to
important.
overwhelm them.
That's the word. Yeah. Indeed. So it's like that. But I, as you say, I think a lot of people would read, you know, this your On My Way Back to You book, and a lot of people can relate to it. A lot of people can you know say, oh my goodness, you know, this person understands. This person's been through what I'm going through, or have gone through, and you know what happened. It's great that I'm not alone, and that's the thing, especially during lockdown. You know, the feeling of being alone, which, as you said, though, I mean, the Zoom meetings and chats and stuff like that. Rather than being alone, it actually brought the families a lot closer together. You know, with that
Absolutely.
going on.
Absolutely. Yeah, I mean, I had friends that I hadn't seen in years who said, "You know, hey, our book group is meeting virtually, and we know you're 1,000 miles away, but do you want to join book group again?" That kind of thing. Those
Yeah.
those connections came back. It was wonderful. It was really wonderful.
I think so, and I think a little bit of it is still there. I think I don't think it's as much as it was. It's amazing me the number of people who suddenly started baking bread again, for instance.
Yes.
You couldn't get a bread making machine for love or money. Everyone said, "Oh,
Right.
I can remember my mother doing this. I really like this making bread stuff. It's a lot cheaper and the bread's a lot better." I mean, it's little things like that sort of thing.
Yes.
And cooking, not just cooking stuff, but I was talking to a
I've
chef last night, making a larder, keeping spares of stuff. So if you see stuff that's on special, you get a big pack of paper towel and keep a couple spare downstairs or something. It's
Right,
which
right. I rearranged all my cupboards because I wanted to put the stuff, forget the fact that it's a wedding present. I'm going to use it now. You know,
exactly.
all the special stuff, I put it down where I could reach it so that I could use it because I don't want to just have it wrapped up after I'm gone and given to my children who are then afraid to use it because it's fragile. Yeah.
Exactly. No, I mean it's I buy and sell on eBay and that, and I get so upset seeing this wonderful china going for next to nothing on online
Yeah.
auctions, and
Yeah.
I mean it's tougher than the it might look more fragile, but in a lot of times it's tougher than this modern stuff sort of thing. Oh, anyway, time is beating us. I was well away there for time is beating us. So what I'm going to do now is hand the show over to you, Sarah, and have you tell everybody where they can find more about you and, of course, your wonderful book.
Ah, well, the book is available at Amazon or at local booksellers if you ask them to special order On My Way Back to You by Sarah Cart. Or they can go online and read a little bit about me at On My Way, www.onmywaybacktoyou.com. It tells a little bit more. There are photos. There are not photos in the book because I just didn't want to share them, but we have Ben and I had fun together coming up with the photos to put on the website. So it's fun to see how our story has evolved.
That's great. Well, thank you so much, Sarah, for being a guest today. I've really enjoyed it. And I'm sure your book has not just given hope, but given understanding and that people realize they're not alone going through this sort of thing. And I'm
Yeah,
sure it's
you're
helped a lot of
stronger
people.
than you think. Yeah.
Exactly,
Yep.
exactly.
Yeah.
Well, good
Yeah.
luck. And,
Thank you.
I hope Ben just gets better and better.
More and more annoying. It's going to be great.
I sound like my wife there. Anyway, thank you.
Barry, thank you. A
Thank
lovely
you.
evening talking with you.
And you.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Well, there you go. My guest today, Sarah Cart, Sarahchcart. And we've been talking about her book, On My Way Back to You. A beautiful book, beautiful story. One couple's journey through catastrophic illness to healing and hope. And as I say, and I'm sure this is the case, people think they're perhaps on their own and they read something like this and realize they're not on their own. And there's other people who can understand what they've been through and gone through and going through in cases. Well, that's it for now. I'll be back on Sunday, 5 to 6 with Those Are the Days, music from the 20th century, and we're going through colours as the theme this at the moment. And this week it's yellow, so think of songs from the 20th century with yellow in the title or by a singer even. And then after that, from 6 to 7, the swinging 60s, music from the 60s from not just the British invasion but from around the world. And then next Tuesday, of course, I'll be back with a fresh guest. But until then, as always, we have one thing left to say. Don't forget.